Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between, and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and San Francisco's Blasian beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Party Foul Radio. I'm Miss Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Teeth.
We're your co-hosts, and you are listening to episode 79, you guys.
So close to 80.
I know. And you know what we failed to mention last episode, 78? Girl, that is 1.5 full years of episodes.
I know. I really just can't wait till we get to 100. Just to say we made it to the triple digits.
Yes, bitch. We're getting there. We're getting there. We're tiptoeing. And later this episode, you will find we are packed with amazing interviews.
As always.
We are going to have Casey Hill, who is recently signed to Kanye West's Good Record label, as well as Harper Starling talking about her brand new debut single called Disco Mirror Dreams. And all the way from Seattle, we're going to be checking in with one of our local queen spotlights. We're going to have the Mama Tits on with us.
Okay.
Come on, Mama Tits. Mama Tits will be bringing her one-woman show to San Francisco in 2 weeks to play at Oasis, so I'll be checking in with her. Girl, Pearl is extremely excited because these are all pre-recorded interviews.
You know I'm down for that party.
Bitch, she loves to get up out of the studio with a quickness. So, what have you been up to, Pearl, since we last checked in?
Girl, trying to stay safe. Shit.
Trying to stay safe?
Yes, girl. Have you not read the news? Have you not heard the news?
What am I missing?
All this shit in North Carolina.
Oh, well, girl, I'm like, girl, in Virginia. It's in Virginia.
That's what I said, but then I had a friend tell me on the way here it was in North Carolina, and I'm like, no, girl,
No. It's in Charlottesville, Virginia, not to be mistaken with Charlotte, North Carolina.
Okay, good. So I was right the first time. Obviously not here talking to you guys, but there's going to be a protest next week. And I'm going to be boarding at my house, making sure I have enough to survive the fucking apocalypse, girl.
Girl, we are facing... We're never even going to make it to triple digits,
we're
girl.
We're not, girl.
The world is going to come to an end before we even get to fucking episode 90.
Right.
But between all the shit that's going down with President Trump, plus the fact that Charlottesville...
Virginia
has been the site of protests between white supremacists and people who are counter-protesters, you know, it's very troubling. And in the middle of all this, the president of the United States is kind of staying mum about it all because the people who are the white supremacists are all supporters of his.
Right.
And he doesn't want to lose their backing. And you guys, it is a fucking hot mess right now.
I feel like that's like a lot of people that you see... That you know. You can relate that to your daily life. There's a lot of people that you see that don't say anything, and it's because they have a lot of people that support people like Trump that are problematic as hell. Girl.
Right. You know, I will say this. Like, I haven't been really, like, outspoken a lot on, like, Facebook or whatever. I've been retweeting a lot of stuff because I've been reading a lot of stuff about this. Oh, girl.
Girl.
You know, it's very interesting because of the fact that, you know, as a person, I'm Caucasian, y'all, in case you can't tell. I'm white.
Y'all knew.
But the fact is that I recognize that I see things from a different perspective than a lot of people because I am Caucasian, so that is naturally something that I'm privy to this understanding. But the vast majority of the people that are close in my social life are not Caucasian.
Right.
And so it makes...
And I feel like that goes for a lot of people that are Caucasian that live in places like San Francisco.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, if you are living in a major metropolitan area, such as San Francisco, New York, other places around the globe, if you if your social circle is predominantly Caucasian, that is almost exclusively by choice. There's some...
Exactly.
It's by choice. Exactly. Because...
Girl, and can I tell you, it's so funny because, like, while I'm dating and stuff, like, I'll get guys that send me pictures of them and their friends. And as soon as I get, like, as soon as I see that most of their friends, if not all of their friends, are solely white, I'm like, girl, that's a red flag. Well, I can't.
Yeah, I mean, the situation that... And this is not me, like, crying victim role or whatever, but it puts, when you are a person who is Caucasian and you're very, like, the pain of people of color is accessible to you because you're close to them, it makes me feel so, like, I feel a little bit trapped. It's like, what do I do? Like, so, and by that I mean, like, I'm in no way responsible for what other people's ignorance is. But I feel like sometimes it's reflected on me, and I get that. Like, I mean, I have to assume part of that because until my actions prove otherwise, I'm seen to be part of the problem.
Right.
And so I always, and this is a long time thing, this is not new to me, you guys. I've always been that voice. Like, I recognize, I think I shared this once on the podcast a long time ago, but I remember years and years ago, when I first moved to San Francisco, it was probably the first year I lived here. My group of friends at that time predominantly was 4 black men, 2 Latinos, and me. That's the crew that I ran with. And we went to a club in Oakland, and I know we've shared this on a previous podcast, but I don't remember when.
I don't remember.
We went to a club in Oakland. It was a like predecessor to the, it was the Bench and Bar, but this was like 3 sets of owners of the Bench and Bar.
Okay.
Bench and Bar is a club mostly for people of color, and it's always historically been that. And we went there for like a Saturday night dancing or whatever. And when we went in, I'm talking 1999 or early 2000, y'all, we had to go through a metal detector even then.
Oh, no.
Like, you get a pat down and go through like a metal detector thing. Well, my friends, like I said, I was the only Caucasian one in the group, and it's run by people of color, for people of color. And all my friends got patted down. All of them got like metal
and you wand, didn't.
And I didn't. And I was pissed on their behalf. I said, look, you know what? We're all here. Like, why would you treat me the way you expect other people, like white people, to treat you? Like, you've done it reverse. Like, you gave me the pass that you would expect white people to give me.
And girl, it's white people that are over here shooting up churches and starting all this drama, girl. The world is about to end.
I mean, it's...
like, the world is about to end, girl.
And then something happened and she immediately grabbed her cooch. I don't know what happened. She's like, the world's ending, my cooch.
You gotta save what you have, girl.
I actually... remember last week, listeners, we talked about mono? We talked about mono?
Not to be confused with the disease. His name is Manu.
It's Mono, but it's a short for, like, a longer name. He's Hawaiian, so it's long, it's like Hella Mono.
Yeah, I know.
Gilman.
Yeah.
Like, Hella, like, it's like...
You're
Hella,
pronouncing it Hella wrong, but well, yeah.
Probably. Anyway, so, but his name is Mono. Anyway, I've hung out with him several times since then, and, like, I actually had lunch with him today, and we were talking about, he is friends with people in, obviously, he's from Hawaii, so he has a lot of friends who participated in the UPP pageant that I competed in a couple of years ago. So we were talking about that today, and I was telling him how, like, they were so wonderful and welcoming, and they threw this big, like, barbecue for us, and he's like, oh, that's so Hawaiian. But I was telling him that when we were barbecuing, I became aware that in that situation, I felt like people of color must feel, like, every day, because here... We're in Hawaii. Everybody around us is Hawaiian. They all, like, they actually speak, you know, like their own native tongue a lot and whatever to each other.
Yeah.
And I was noticeably super Caucasian among them. And, like, and I felt, even though they were so wonderful and so accepting and so beautiful, as almost all Hawaiians are to people.
Mm-hmm. So sweet.
Yeah, of course. It's called the Aloha Spirit for a reason, y'all. But I felt... very an outsider. And I was like, and I think that other people might not have, like, made that connection. But then I was like, you know what? This is what people of color must feel like every single day when they are the only black kid in their school. Or
except a little more in danger.
Well, you know? I mean, right. Like, the danger, but I did mean, like, right. I was in no danger. But it's that thing of, what I meant was just that feeling of, even when you're part of, not feeling part of, because you are noticeably different.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter how nice people are or how welcoming or embracing,
you're still
different.
Yeah.
And it was like, I don't think a lot of white people in that situation would have necessarily
taken to that well.
Made that kind of connection, like that emotional connection that, because of the fact that I have always been in parts of groups of people, like my friends from college, we used to joke, this is when Friends was first coming out, we used to joke that like, we were like the group of friends, only we had representation of everything. Like, you know, on TV shows, they try to represent everything. Like, we had the one Asian, the black girl, the Latino, the gay, there was every single thing in our group. And so I've always been part of that. And within the group, you don't feel it, but then you start to think about...
Didn't you grow up somewhere in, like, the country or something like that?
Right. Well, this is delving into my history. Like, I went to college in Cleveland, and the school was not like super duper Caucasian, but we probably accurately reflected the percentages that you would find in general in the country. You know what I mean? Like, in a major metropolitan area like this, you guys, the ethnic diversity is way skewed.
Right.
Like, you leave this city and you go outside of the city. And maybe not in California because there's a lot of Latinos and stuff like that.
It just depends where you go.
But depending on where you go in the rest of the United States, you can find areas where there's... I remember when I was living in rural Ohio as a child, there was legitimately, like, two people of color who went to my school. And they were a brother and a sister, and they were like, half black. Like, their dad had been black, so they were, like... Donnie and Danita Miracle were their names, and like
that's lovely. That's a lovely name. Anyway,
and they were very attractive, but like the thing was, like they were the only people of color in like that whole kind of area. So, but as a child, as a young child, I lived in inner city Houston for like first grade through like most of my elementary school. We moved around a lot, so the scene changed, but. It was still a very racially diverse area where I lived. Mm-hmm. And from the time I was 6 years old, all the way through growing up, everywhere I went until I got to high school, my best friend in wherever I lived was always a person of color. Like, always.
Random.
So, I mean, it was just, it wasn't like by choice or it wasn't something I sought out. It was just how it was.
Yeah.
Like, so I've always had that kind of perspective, you know. And for when you're a child, this is the thing. When you're a kid, you don't like, I legit think that I discovered like that there was like a racial, like a legit racial difference when I was in like third grade.
Girl, I remember realizing it right off the bat because when I was in kindergarten, it was me and one other black kid in the class, and we became friends. And our school was pretty diverse. But there still wasn't many black people.
Right. Well,
so I don't know. I felt it since, you know, as early as I can remember.
But I think that's because you were the different one.
Exactly.
And for me, like, I remember sort of, not to make it sound like I thought I was black as a child, but like, I remember in third grade, we moved to a new school. And I had moved out of this apartment complex where there was, like, children of all colors.
Yeah.
And we moved to a school where there was, like, everybody was white. Like, we moved into we were, like, the poor family in the nice neighborhood.
Okay.
And we went to a nice school just for third grade. And there was, no people of color. And I remember becoming aware at that point that was a thing. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Because when you are a child, like, there's this... quote from Obama where President Obama says, like, children are not born to notice race and color and hate people based on differences.
Right.
That's something that's taught. Well, I lived in this apartment complex where there was just, like, dozens of children, and then we were all just children.
Yeah.
And it never occurred to me until we moved, and it was, like, noticeably different. And my mom was like, why don't you like this school? Like, this is a nice school. We live in a nice house. And I was just like, there's nobody like me here.
Oh,
and my mom was like, what do you mean? And I legit, like, think that that's when it registered with me that I was white. Like, right. Because I really identified with just the other kids that I knew, you know? Right. Which explains, you guys, it's not like there's something really deep-seated with my, like, interracial dating thing. It's like, I
right.
Like, you know, it's not something that I think that people expect, but my first, like, real crushes, the first time I ever had a crush on a little boy was when I was in second grade, and he was, like, my best friend, and he happened to be black. And then my first sexual encounter with a little boy was when I was in third grade. At that night school, our neighbor, there was a white girl, and her brother, her younger brother, was half black, and, like, he was my, we messed around in a closet.
Oh, wow. Of course.
And that's a scandalous story. Anyway, my first, like more mature crushes were when I was in seventh and eighth grade, and my best friend at that time, his name was Anthony, and my sister was best friends with his little sister named Tanya.
You always had a crush on your best friend?
No. Anthony's older brothers.
Oh, you're a hoe.
Oh, no. I didn't do anything with them. I just had a crush on them. I was in seventh and eighth grade.
I hate the friend that sticks around and ends up having a crush on, like, your siblings. I'm like, what are you doing?
Oh, my God.
They're my siblings. What's wrong with you?
I do think that's really natural, though.
It's,
like,
weird.
Girl, why do you think so many people, like, marry, like, their older brother's best friend or whatever?
No. Nope.
Because it's just a natural thing. But when I'm going to
tell you right now, my little brother's moving with me in September. My friends, I'm going to have a fucking, I'm going to board up his room. Well, I'm going to have a special door for when people come over.
You should, because her brother's cute, y'all, so she should really board up some shit. But when I was in seventh and eighth grade, my best friend was a year younger than me, and he came from this huge, it was like the Black Brady Bunch.
I love
But more than the Black Brady Bunch, because, like, the mom had three kids, and the dad had three kids, and then they had three kids after that.
Shit.
So they had, no, two kids after that. So there was eight kids. So three from the dad, three from the mom, and then the youngest two were from, like, the marriage together.
Were they all close in age? Not that it matters.
Well, the girl, like, it's also funny, y'all, because the mom had girls, and the dad had boys.
Wow.
And then together they had a boy and a girl.
Of course.
So, but, and they were all, like, the girls were in high school. The boys I think the one had just graduated high school, and one was in high school and then graduating when I was, anyway, it's an odd name for a black person, but my friend Anthony's older brother, Skip, he was my fantasy. Like, he was so gorgeous. He's so gorgeous.
Have you seen where Skip is today?
I have not seen Skip today, these days, but I...
Have you looked him up on Facebook?
No, but I'm Facebook friends with my sister's best friend from that time. Her name is Tanya. And I need to look her up, like, look up the brothers and see what they look like now. Something tells me they probably didn't age well. Like,
why?
Just because, you know, like...
Girl, if they were black...
Right, I'm not talking about that. What I'm saying is that, like, I don't know, something tells me that, like, they might have been troublemakers, despite the fact that his name was Skip. So, like, troublemakers, like, age a little differently than other people. Because you know, maybe, like, if they do all kinds of things that they shouldn't be doing, and drinking, and drugging, and da-da-da-da, and criming.
It's possible. And criming.
I don't want to assume. It's not a stereotype that I'm trying to put out there. It's the fact that I knew that they were always getting in trouble as teenagers. So it's like, but girl, you cannot tell. Like, when you're a teenager.
People change, though.
That's true. Girl, I sure did.
I mean, look at me.
So, okay. So, I mean, she takes it to an all new level, y'all.
Right.
So, anyway, I don't remember how this started. Oh, yes. About Charlottesville, Virginia.
And
some shit is going down there.
Protests are coming here next week, girl.
Are those people coming here? Like, the white supremacists?
I wouldn't doubt it.
Because I actually saw on the cover of the San Francisco Examiner something like, supremacists target San Francisco.
I believe it.
Why would you come here? Like,
stir some shit, girl. They are, in your definition, drama llamas. They want it, girl.
Yes, they are drama llama ding-dongs. But they also, I think the reason they're coming here is because they're protesting the fact that San Francisco is a...
Sanctuary city.
And they're like, they're here to protest. Bitch, all I can say is, if anywhere is going to be a situation where violence could break out, it would definitely be here. Because in other places, the amount of people who probably are willing and open to protest in the face of those kind of individuals might be smaller. Bitch, not in San Francisco.
I don't know, girl. I'm scared. I can't do it. I need to go home, lock myself up.
You can lock yourself up, bitch. I'm going to find out when it is. I'm going to be there in drag, honey.
I know you will.
I'll be there. But Sister Roma and I will be right there. I'll be in their fucking face.
That's crazy white people, you guys.
See, that is the difference, y'all. It's just like watching a scary movie. You know, the black people are like, uh-uh, bitch, I'm leaving. But the white people are like, we should stick it out here, girl.
What's that noise?
like, let me go out here. I only got on a tube top and a pair of panties, but let me go outside and check what this is. No, I will be there. And this is the thing. Like, the reason I specifically am thinking that I want to be there in drag is because of the fact that when I walk into the streets, like, unless I open my mouth or do something really flamboyant, I can probably get a little bit of a pass.
Right. And you, I think you being there in drag will actually be, it'll be safer for you because on one side, because if you go in just as white cis male, who knows what side is going
to
attack you?
Right. And that's the thing. Like, I want to make myself, strangely enough, I want to make myself the most vulnerable version of me. Because the fact that if I show up there as just a cis white male, there's always the fact that I still have that, I have some privilege given to me. I want to go as the most vulnerable version of me. And I'll be like, let's do this, bitch. Sister Roma, I'll grab that bitch by her boa. Let's go, girl! You know, whatever. But, you know,
Are you guys going together?
I don't know. I haven't talked to her about it. But that's something that, like, I definitely... And the reason I'm doing this is, as I said, like, when you recognize that you've grown up with privilege, like, the only way that you can really, truly show your support is to be willing to compromise that privilege for what's right. And I have always been that. I don't care. I will fucking stand up for my friends. I will stand up for what I believe to be right. And I will...
because you're standing up for you at the same time.
Know what I mean? Well, I mean, yes, absolutely. Because as a gay man, I don't get a pass. But this is not... You know, society is built with levels of privilege. And unfortunately, Pearl, you are like...
At the bottom of the barrel, girl.
You are at the bottom. Like a trans woman of multiple colors.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you are...
I have every reason for some bigot to hate me.
And it is one of those things where, you know, if I wanted to, I talked about this in an interview that I think is later in this episode where, like, you have to trade in... You have to be willing to trade in whatever level of privilege you have to stand up for what's right. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's easy. You know, it's the idea that they came for the Jews and I said nothing.
Girl. Then
they
can,
you know, it's that idea because eventually, no matter what, they are going to go to the base of the base. They're going to peel off level by level until there's nothing left until you're the one that they're after.
And then it's too late because you ain't got nobody else to stand up.
You ain't got nothing to. Yep, exactly right. And I'm sorry. I will be right there. And I know. Sexy D Del Mar, my mom's gonna be fucking worried sick if she finds this out.
I was gonna say, girl, whatever you do, just be careful.
You know, right. But the fact of the matter is, my niece and nephews are biracial, and so, and I refuse to let them grow up in this world like that. So, I refuse. They're teenagers and in college age, and, you know, well, honey, they could be ugly as fuck, but they'd be beautiful to me. They happen to be gorgeous, you guys, but, I won't do it. I will not let them live in a... if I can do something to change it, I won't let them live in a world like this.
Aww. Yeah. So, anyone who's in San Francisco, there will be a protest in Christy Fields on August 26th. I don't know what time.
August 26th. Okay. So I need to make that in my calendar so that
For those of you that live in the area that don't plan on going to the protest, just be careful. For those of you that do, be careful.
Girl, Christy Fields far away, so bitch, I have to figure out how to get there too. Like,
is it? It's kind of far. It's from far. Here.
Girl, I'll take a bus. I don't care. That's the day I'll be a huss on a bus.
I've done it.
So, anyway. I'll find out what's going on with Roma. We'll try to rally the troops. That's something it's worth standing up for. And to all of you out there who are standing with our community, whether you're part of it or not, and standing with people of color, whether you are a person of color or not, thank you. Because your voice does make a difference. And I really think that at this point in time...
We need everybody.
We do. And this is kind of shit that people speculated would happen, but I really, honestly...
Girl, it hasn't even been a year. It's damn near a civil war.
I'm sitting here reflecting back to the episode we were recording the night of the election when we were like, no, and we bum-rushed my mom.
Right.
And we're like, no, this couldn't be happening. My mom's like, he's winning, y'all. He is winning. And my mom God love her. My mom is...
That's right. I forgot we were recording the night.
The night of the election. And we were devastated by the end of it. And
devastated, girl. I totally remember.
This is stuff that I really did not think that we would be seeing again. Because what we're facing here is, like, this is the kind of shit that was happening actually during the civil rights movement of the 60s, where people were out there actively protesting. And the difference being that we actually had leadership in our country that was willing to address these issues. The current leadership is like...
It's on both sides.
It's like, girl, it's not on both sides, honey. Like, it's not on both
That's
sides.
That's what he's trying to
say. Of course. Did both sides drive a car into the other side? No.
Right.
Honey. One side drove a car. And you know what he said? He's got mental illness. He needs help. Motherfucker,
course.
I bet you if his ass had been brown, he would have been all kinds of a terrorist.
Or a thug, or...
Yes.
Gangster, or something.
Horrible. Doesn't matter. Despicable what's going on.
It's gross. I hope you guys are... Like, I need to... I was talking to my partner about this the other day. I need to get water in my house. Like, just all...
Oh, my God! She's getting war preparedness.
I am, girl. Because it's either going to be a bomb or it's going to be a civil war, if not both.
I'm, like... Pearl is getting... She's about to, like...
My edges are almost gone, girl. It's scary.
Oh, my God. I will say that I have been flirting with, like, a depression, legit depression, since the election, like, since the elections, like, all these months, because of the fact that it's really getting more increasingly difficult to just sort of, like, wake up and go about your day without being bombarded by social media with all these horrible news releases.
Right.
Something horrible's going on. Somebody's being attacked or died.
I tried my hardest to say, today. I'm just noticing how much more I'm getting stressed out by logging on to any kind of social media.
Absolutely.
And then, like, I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna avoid Facebook and stuff today. And I was on Instagram and I'm seeing stuff and I'm like, what's going on now? And then I was like, okay, well, let me go on Facebook so I could see what's going on. And then that's how I found about the protest coming up. And I'm like, it's here. It's at our front doorstep, girl.
It is. And it is increasingly becoming difficult to avoid this kind of information. And not that I necessarily condone avoiding current events or avoiding, awareness of... I think that we should all be politically aware. I think we should all be politically savvy. I think that we should all... be mindful of what is happening societally in our country and around the world. I think it's important because if you are not informed and educated, there's no way that you can have a positive impact whatsoever. You can't contribute to the conversation. You can't force your legislators to take action. You can't call people. You can't protest. You can't whatever.
Right.
But at the same time, when you are consistently and constantly bombarded by negative information, negative things that are...
It's headache after headache, girl.
Yeah, things that are geared towards various communities of which any individual might be part of.
Right.
You know, if it's not one group that's being attacked,
it's another.
If it's not that group, it's something else. And it feels incessant, it feels targeted, and it feels personal.
Right.
And I log on to Facebook and it makes me fucking exhausted.
Sick. Yeah, yes, exhausted. Yeah,
I feel exhausted and I legitimately feel ill because it's an increasing sense of hopelessness that I'm beginning to feel. Like, I felt so hopeful and optimistic and happy about the direction our country was going with President Obama for 8 years.
Yeah,
delightful, wonderful, well-spoken, conscientious, mindful. Incredibly intelligent.
Kind.
And then, boom.
Right.
Legitimately, and I'm not talking, making this as a race comment, but they are like photo negatives to each other.
Right.
Like, they are the exact opposite. Jesus. And I look at the fact that there have been a series of things, for example, that have happened that have been really rattling to the community, like the United States as a community, as a whole, as a nation. The bombing of that mosque.
Yeah.
Not a peep from Donald Trump.
No.
Not a word. He can fucking go on Twitter all day and all night talking about Saturday Night Live
right.
And the New York Times, but something like a mosque being bombed and attacked is not addressed by him whatsoever. He will go on and talk about how the New York Times is failing and fake news this and fake news that, but a protest happens between white supremacists and the opposing viewpoint, and a man drives a car into a crowd, injuring 19 people and killing one, and Donald Trump does not address it for 2 days.
No.
Girl.
And when he does address it, it's half-assed. It's not even legitimate.
It's so frustrating. Obama, President Obama, addressed those kind of things, like, within minutes.
Right on, yeah.
And expressed deep condolences and sympathies, things that aren't, like, when you are in a moment of crisis, you need a compassionate person who can say, we're looking at this, and we feel the pain that you're feeling. But the difference is that Donald Trump doesn't feel any of that because he does not give a fuck. I literally do not think... He has no...
None.
He has no compassion for anyone. I really don't think that he believes... I don't think he wants to support or help or contribute to anyone. I don't even think that he wants to support, contribute, or help like these white supremacists who think he does. Right. He is so... I really believe he is solely in this for Donald Trump. Girl, he's making so much money off this presidency because...
He's doing this to pay for those taxes he didn't pay for.
He's making so much money off the presidency. All these... Every single one of these vacations that he takes to one of his own golf courses.
Yeah.
Where the country pays for it. He's not, like, going there and staying for free. The country's paying him to stay at his own place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's so much that is shady as fuck with this. Maxine Waters, when will you reclaim right. our presidency?
Right.
Bitch, you've reclaimed your time. Like, how about doing something, getting the people behind you, and reclaiming our country, girl?
Right. Can we all reclaim our time? Please.
I would love to reclaim the last 7-8 months.
Right.
Almost a year now because, you know, he was elected in November, so this has just been hanging over our heads for almost a year now.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, you guys, we know that we are fucking a couple of Debbie Downers over
right.
here.
Right.
Look. If you are living in Kenya, Somalia, or Uganda, things are horrible for you, too. We know that. But the U.S. right. isn't all peachy and keen and rainbows and sunshine.
Trust me, it's not the time to come here.
We know that it is way better here, even with all this going on, than it is in many places around the world. We're aware of that. We are aware that there are places where two individuals such as ourselves would be silenced, probably by death.
By death, bro.
Just for having a podcast like this. So we do understand that we have it better. But what we are telling you around the world and throughout our country is that we are in the middle of a fight legitimately for our lives, as Jackie Beat said last episode. And I for one, girl, I got an outfit in my drag room right now. I will dress as She-Ra or Wonder Woman and go into battle, bitch.
Yes.
I'm ready to do it.
Like, I live.
We are holding out for the hero, honey. And I say that if you are holding out for a hero, bitch, you need to be your own hero. You need to get up and do something that you can be proud of today.
Right. It just makes me think, where is Obama? I just want him to say something just to say something.
I read that in November, he is getting ready to, he's taking some time off. But I read, and it didn't say specifics, but in November, he is about to return in a political sense. I'm assuming that it is coming up on time for another round of elections, and he's probably going to be backing the fuck out of some people.
I hope so.
The man is genius. And I personally think that people are still like, if Hillary runs again, Hillary runs. Girl, Hillary had her chance.
Girl, bye. She, you had one job.
She had her chance. Unfortunately, that shit got undermined by Russia. I think that the
and
world
an email, girl,
I
bye.
Think that the world needs to be looking at Michelle Obama because
right.
that bitch smart as fuck.
Right.
Smart, kind, considerate, beautiful, respected.
Right. Everything.
As far as we know, ain't got no kind of shady underhanded email schemes going
yeah, no
on.
Emails, girl.
Doesn't have a husband that cheated on her. Doesn't have nothing that, like, is no baggage.
Pays her taxes.
Okay, she got it all. She's doing it all. She's got some beautiful children. So I think that, and she's still young.
And she's still young.
She's still young. So no offense to you, Hillary. I think that I voted for you, honey.
Girl, take it how you want. It needs to be Michelle.
But, you know, Michelle Obama has everything necessary.
Yeah.
To begin moving towards this. And I think that our country really, at a time like this, when we've got, like, this hot-headed asshole who is, like, a misogynist, a bigot, all these horrible male stereotypes, now is really the time for a nice, gentle, well-thought-out, compassionate, level-headed female approach to leadership.
Right.
Girl, I'm all behind you, Michelle. Michelle Obama.
Right. Right. I think so many, there's so many people who want it to be Michelle.
I think
you know, we would have, there would be parties in the streets the day that she announces her, decision to run.
I think a lot of people would question her abilities because she's not had an elected office and all this mm-hmm. stuff. But I think that she certainly has, she certainly has as much fucking credibility in my book as Donald Trump, for the love of God. And, ooh, another person that they keep saying, asking if he's going to run for president is The Rock.
The Rock, yeah. It's him and there's somebody, another celebrity that he's talking about running with.
It's so weird because I don't know necessarily what kind of, like, politics The Rock's got. But I am sure watch a press conference with him, honey. I'm so stupid. I sure would. I'd be like, President Rock.
President Dwayne Johnson.
Would you please do this press conference with your shirt off? Boo. Thank you.
Right.
So anyway, you guys, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to have with us a pre-recorded interview. As I mentioned earlier, singer Casey Hill is currently signed to Good Records. That is the record label owned by Kanye West. And her album, Like a Woman, is available on iTunes for download now. Go check out her single, Hard to Love, on YouTube. We'll be back with more Party Foul Radio and Casey Hill right after this.
Oh, she really came that way? All right. My name is Alyssa Edwards.
All right,
I need to get up in this gig, girl.
My name is Alyssa Edwards, and this is Party Foul Radio.
I don't get cute, I get drop dead gorgeous.
Each and every episode of Party Foul Radio is brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine. Left Magazine is Northern California's most reliable source for arts, entertainment, information, and beautiful photo pictorials covering the LGBTQ nightlife scene. Pick up your copy today in San Francisco or visit them at liveleft.com. All right, everybody, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. You can tell by the music, of course, that I'm on the line being on hold with the beautiful Martha Tang at Mighty Real Agency in New York City. Today, we are going to be interviewing Casey Hill. Her new album, Like a Woman, is available on iTunes for download. She's a recent signee to Kanye West's Good record label. That's G-O-O-D. And her first single for public consumption is called Hard to Love. It's an amazing dance track. But as we will talk with Casey, if you listen to the full body of work, which you can go over to her YouTube channel and hear in its entirety, it's a very different vibe from the rest of the album. Casey got her start as an American Apparel model who then went on tour with Kanye West when she left the tour to go record music of her.
Hello?
Hold
on. Getting Casey right now. Hold tight.
So
hold
as
tight. Don't go anywhere. I'm not going to say anything in the meantime. Because if I do, it'll end up somewhere that I don't want it to be.
Well, girl, it's already being recorded. I'm expecting your seductive Asian voice to, like, lure the straight guys in for you, finally. I mean, I know you're neck deep in the gay boys, but, honey.
All right, I've got Casey on the line. Thank you very much. Hi.
Hi, Casey.
Hello, how are you?
I am very well. I spent the morning listening to Like a Woman to prepare for this, and so now let's talk.
Yay!
So, my first question is, I was introduced to you through the single Hard to Love, and which I love. Hard to love is easy to love. So, and I was wondering, sonically, that track seems to have such a different vibe from most of the rest of the content on Like a Woman, and I was wondering if you could tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote Hard to Love just kind of in the mix of making the album.
And when I was writing most of the album, it sounded a lot different. I think a lot of it was closer to Hearts of Love, where there was more, like, drums, and I think there was still a lot of, like, inspiration from, like, 90s alternative and things like that, because that's what I grew up listening to. And then I kind of redid the production of the entire album last year, and Hearts of Love was one of them where no matter what I did to kind of reproduce it, it like, wasn't as good as the demo. So I ended up just kind of going back to basically the framework of the demo, and it was like, this is kind of the only thing this song can be, and it, you know, it's nice to have, like, a little up-tempo moment in the album, too, so I was kind of okay with it just being a bit different.
Right. It's very much, when I first heard Hard to Love, I expected the rest of the album to be dance pop, because that's sort of the genre that I'd place that in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think the whole thing, it was just kind of like a learning process, this album, and I think it evolved into, like, something that was more minimal and cool, and it felt honest to make it that, and just to have this moment where, you know, Hard to Love kind of was this pop salvation, I guess.
Now, your vocals on the album are what I would consider very ethereal sounding, and it meshes beautifully with the kind of electronic undertones of the album. But I would also say that your voice is infused with something that, to me as a listener, felt like a bit of melancholy. And I was wondering if there's truth to that statement.
Like, I wrote the songs from a very personal place, and they, like, you know, a lot of them are kind of tender, and I think that singing them felt very vulnerable, and I think that probably comes through just in how I sing them.
I would definitely think so, and you have described this album as, for you, very freeing emotionally, because from what I've heard you say previously, some of the emotions that you express, you kept rather close to yourself before exploring them through music.
Yeah, I think I've always been kind of a private person, sort of. Like, I was mostly an only child. I have a half-sister who's 9 years younger than I am. But, like, growing up mostly an only child, like, with my mom, I think I was just really quiet and independent and, I don't know, just kept stuff to myself. So I think that music was one of the first, it really was the first time where I was, like, very outward with what I was feeling and how I communicate those things. So I think that it was just kind of this, like, I don't know, this release.
By all accounts, you have told people who've asked about Like a Woman that it's an auditory exploration of your sexuality and sexual identity, and which you've said was very difficult to some degree to do publicly. And I was wondering if you could talk to us about that experience of exploring those subject matters through your music.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the album itself isn't completely about sex. It's really just about, like, I think for me, it was just about, like, my identity and some of that, you know, line and my, you know, sexual identity and all of that. But a lot of it's really about being alone and kind of, like, finding myself separate from, like, relationships that I grew up with, or, you know, people that I grew up with, or just relationships in general. And I don't know, I think that a lot of my identity has been defined by my sexuality because of, you know, American Apparel modeling I did and things like that, like images of me that already existed on the internet. So people kind of had this idea of who I was. So I think that I was kind of figuring it out at the same time that people had this, like, cemented idea of, like, ooh, Casey, like, sexy bodysuit American Apparel.
Right. You know, I really do love the fact that you said that your past as an American Apparel model led to the public taking some kind of ownership of your sexuality by adding their own narrative to the images that were released. And I really would love to hear more of your thoughts on that.
For me, the biggest thing with this album was to, I don't think I'm, like, trying to make this whole statement about female sexuality in general, but I think for me it's a really personal experience where when all the American Apparel stuff came out, I was never, like, bothered by it at all, or I never felt that comfortable by, you know, having images of me on the internet, but they definitely, like, kind of spread like wildfire, as the internet does. And there was, like, some of it was like, oh, this is cool. And then a lot of it was like, made me feel kind of icky the way that people take ownership of, like, just an image of a random girl on the internet, and kind of, like, exploit it in a way that, like, felt uncomfortable to me. And then I think there was also, like, people that I knew, like family or friends, that kind of tried to, I think they kind of subconsciously did it because it made them uncomfortable, but made me feel like I should not have done that, and like I should have, you know, been more modest or done something else. So around this album, I was like, you know, I feel like I don't have my own, like, take on it. Like, there's no way that I'm able to say, like, hey, this is my choice and this is what I wanted to do, and it doesn't bother me. So I kind of wanted to take all of that and basically express who I am, like, as a woman and my sexuality in a way that felt honest to me and like it was my own perspective.
And now, not to pry, Casey, but I was wondering if you could give me examples of that, because we're talking about American Apparel modeling images. It's not like you were doing hardcore pornographies, or, you know what I mean? Or it's not like a sex tape bleeped of you. And I'm curious how people portrayed that or took, you know what I mean? Does that make sense what I'm asking you? Because it kind of blows my mind. I'm like, these are modeling images.
Yeah, and it kind of blew my mind too. And I think it was also, it's weird how quickly, like, culture changes too. Like, it was before this whole, like, free the nipple movement, kind of, or it was, like, the very beginning of it. And a lot of it was, like, super sheer lingerie, so it had, like, nipples in it or things like that. But, and I also came from Arizona, which is, like, it's a bit more conservative.
It's a bit more screwed up.
So I feel like, yeah. Yeah, but, like, I feel like there was just, I had people that would be like, oh, I saw your images for American Apparel. You know, I didn't know you were doing, like, that kind of modeling. Or, you know, things like that where I'm like, oh, definitely an implication that you are uncomfortable with this or that you want me to feel bad or, like, that I should get rid of it. And then it was also when I started doing music, it was like, okay, so let's get all the American Apparel images offline. Like, we can start you new, things like that. And it was like, oh, that's, like, all of those things combined show that there's this, like, collective kind of, like, guilt over it, or this, like, collective shame that I don't really want to take on. And, yeah, it was just, I think it's, like, I don't know, it's very strange.
No, as a gay man, it is not very strange to me, because what the reason I say that is because of the fact that that is the basis for what so many people in the LGBTQ community are left to deal with, because we become comfortable with ourselves, in our sexuality and who we are and who we love and how we express ourselves. But when it makes other people uncomfortable, we begin to assume that for ourselves. We take on their discomfort. And so I do get that. And it's like, you know, you don't have to be comfortable with my decisions. Like, I have to be comfortable with my decisions.
Yeah, completely. And I think that in a way it almost, like, created this uprising and like, who I am. And I was like, okay, if you can sit in your discomfort and whatever, but I almost felt like I got to a point where I'm like, I do not care anymore what you feel about what I'm doing, because it makes me feel good and this is, like, what I am. So I feel like I almost, like, with the album Creative and everything, just kind of took it to, like, an extreme degree and made it almost a little bit satirical, but it, like, felt good to me just to be like, like, I don't care anymore if you're uncomfortable with this, and, you know, I'll, whatever, I don't need you listening to it if you're uncomfortable with it.
Right, and I think that happened, again, making a parallel between your experience, which is not at all like what I'm about to say, but to some degree the sentiment is the same, is that's why I think that when so many people finally come out, for example, they go to an absolute extreme. They're like waving the pride flag at their family gathering or whatever. And it's, you know, it's just because it's like, this is now your problem, not mine.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. I feel like you have to have this, like, it feels like a breath of fresh air, maybe.
Absolutely. Now, given the situation that Nipplegate had for you, how have those people responded to you masturbating in the Like a Woman video on a bus. On a bus,
I
Casey.
It's weird. I think that, yeah, on a, I mean, not something I do, but for the beauty of, you know, art, whatever, I think, for the most part, I think people have been, like, have mostly just acknowledged the fact that it's like, oh, this video is, like, really beautifully shot, and it's, like, and that's, you know, there's, like, cinematic value and all of that, and that was kind of the, you know, the biggest takeaway from it, but... I don't know. I think people have been like, why is she doing this? Like, I don't get it. And then I got one review that was like, we don't need any more, like, female masturbation videos. Like, Hailee Steinfeld and Tove Lo already did it. And I was like, well, that's like saying, like, you can, like, only have one rapper with girls in their video. Like, that's dumb. But I don't know. It's just been kind of mixed. I don't, you know. I think people will always be uncomfortable with what they're uncomfortable with, and at the end of the day, I thought it was beautiful, and it was, like, I think it was just a really well-done video.
It is well done, and it was not lost upon me that at the end, you disappear into a giant vagina.
Yes!
I mean, that was not lost.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of, like, little parallels to things, that, like, that last image... Jack, the director's kind of, like, drew from The Birth of Venus, and then, of course, it looks like a vagina, which is just a treat.
It really is a treat. And I also have to say that for anyone who might be a lesbian who is listening, the song is great because I don't recall you ever giving a gender pronoun to who it is that's making you feel like a woman, so it's up to their imagination what makes you feel like a woman.
I think in a lot of ways I kind of wrote it as, like, to myself and then also to just whoever. I think part of, like, this period of my life was interesting because I was kind of, like, figuring out my own sexuality and, like, what do I want. And I was like, well, I guess everything's kind of open-ended at this point. Like, I'm not, you know, married. I'm not, like, married to any gender or whatever. So it's kind of, like, nice. Like, really in the entire album there's no pronouns.
So, does that mean, then, that you are exploring what your actual sexual identity is?
Yeah, I think I had, like, a really good, like, awakening in the past year that I kind of was avoiding for a long time. Where I wouldn't call myself completely straight, you know, but I don't know, it's just kind of fluid, and, like, I think a lot of people are these days. It's like, you know, you kind of realize that you're, like, attracted to women and men. And it's like, whatever.
Really going to the sentiment of the, like a woman, what that song is about, I think that it is a growing sentiment that whoever brings you a sexual awakening or a sexual feeling becomes okay. And I think in the past people might have felt, like, a tinge of that or recognized it, but it was so taboo societally that they avoided it, and now younger people perhaps of your generation or even slightly older are more cognizant of the fact that it doesn't mean you're gay or it doesn't mean you're a lesbian. It means that you're a sexual being and that sexuality is a spectrum.
Completely. Yeah, I think that I don't think you really have to be married to, like, or more people are realizing that you don't really have to be married to, like, I am straight and I only like people of the opposite gender, and that is what I am. Like, there's so many nuances to it, and I think that it's, like, I don't know, I think that the past year was, like, an interesting, I guess, just, like, journey for me to be like, oh, I have, like, feelings for, you know, women, and I have feelings for men, and this is, like, cool, and it's, like, okay to have all of those things.
What was the catalyst for that discovery?
I think that it's always been there, and I was, like, really afraid to acknowledge it. And I think I also had no idea how to, like, approach a woman. I was like, well, I just, like, what if they think I'm weird, you know? And so I think I just, like, basically just had, like, a woman approach me, and I was like, oh, okay, cool, like, this is cool, I'm into it. And, like, I'm with a man now, and, like, I'm so in love, and he's amazing, but I was like, I'm kind of glad that I had, like, an experience where I could just be like, oh, okay, that's confirmed, like, there, like, is that part of me, and there is this, like, fluidity in me that I've, like, I know that I've been avoiding for a long time.
Well, I think that especially for people, and I'd put you in this class to some degree, that who are gender nonconforming definitely have probably a greater propensity for that than people who are really married to their gender identity. Meaning, not that I don't think that you're a woman, but I mean that, like, you don't seem to be absolutely driven by society's expectations of what women should be, how they should dress, how they should act. So I think that there's a greater propensity for the fluidity.
Completely. Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, a lot of, I guess, me discovering, like, or, you know, defining my sexuality and who I am as a person also had to do with, like, kind of trying to figure out what being feminine meant to me. And, like, you know, being feminine, being vulnerable, is it, like, it's, like, so, it's, like, such a, I don't know, loaded word. So I think it's just, yeah, it's about kind of unpacking all those things.
Hey, Paul?
Yes?
I'm sorry, we're going to have to wrap up this call. Do you have one last question, Casey? I'm so sorry.
No, girl, how dare you, Martha Tang? Casey, she is the worst. You can get into an amazing conversation, and you're like, oh, this is brilliant.
I know, I'm so sorry. But Casey has a very busy schedule. She has things to do, you know?
I absolutely. Now, the last question that I wanted to ask you, I'm going to try to marry a whole bunch of questions, is that it's clear that you have been, like, a great deal to Kanye West, who signed you to his record label. And it seems like having a mentor like that, but being on a label that doesn't, where your album would stand out in terms of what people would expect from a Kanye West produced record and record label, must be a very unique experience. And I was wondering if you could talk about that.
A big reason that I signed to Good Music is because I felt like I wasn't necessarily, like, specifically competing with another artist that was doing something similar to me, so that was kind of appealing to me, and I felt like I could create my own lane, and it's definitely been a lot of trial and error just in figuring out exactly what my sound is and exactly how it fits on the label and just with everything else in there, and I think I've realized through, you know, making this album and, you know, listening to everything else on Good Music and just kind of the evolution of Good Music, that the biggest thing is just that there's, on the label, there's, like, an attention to detail. There's, like, an attention to aesthetic and to, like, the feel of a project, and it's just, like, a bunch of artists that do what they want to do. So at the end of the day, I think it fits in just in the sense that I kind of did something that I wanted to do.
And having Kanye West as a mentor has got to be a dream come true for any young artist.
Oh, completely. It's insane.
Yeah, I would think so. Now, Casey, thank you so much for talking today. I know Martha's driving you off to the next interview, but I definitely appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. And I look forward to seeing what comes of things in the future for you.
Oh, thank you so much. I cannot wait. It was a pleasure, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, everybody. Once again, that was Casey Hill. Go check out her debut album, Like a Woman, and her first single called Hard to Love. You're going to love it. I do. Both are available now on iTunes as well as YouTube. Check it out. That was brought to us, of course, by Martha Tang and the people at Mighty Real Agency in New York City. By the way, they are also responsible for hooking us up with our next pre-recorded interview, which is going to come to you right after these few messages, with Harper Sterling. And get this, ideally, fingers crossed, unless something goes dreadfully wrong, on our next episode, we are going to have Kirsten Maldonado of Pentatonix with us, also courtesy of Martha. Martha, you are my favorite power top. God, I never thought I'd say that about an Asian woman. Anyway, we will be back with more Party Foul Radio right after this. I'm your co-host, Poet Almar, and you are listening to episode 79. Party Foul Radio is brought to you each week by GuideToGay.com. GuideToGay.com is Australia's premier destination for LGBTQ news down under, Australia's favorite gay destination. Get all your information about what's happening in the LGBTQ scene, as well as travel information for around the world. Go to GuideToGay.com. GuideToGay.com is a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio. If you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, go to the Castro, 4902 19th Street. Visit Daddy's Barbershop, voted San Francisco's favorite barbershop in the 2017 Bestie Awards. Arlen, Jesse, and all the men and women of Daddy's Barbershop are going to hook you up with your haircut for the summer. Party Foul Radio is proudly brought to you in conjunction with Daddy's Barbershop. And we're back with more Party Foul Radio. I am Poyo Del Mar, your co-host. Pearl Tease is taking a quick little tinkle, and we are now going to take you to a pre-recorded interview with Harper Sterling.
Hi. How are you?
I am fucking delightful. How are you?
What did you just say?
I said I'm fucking delightful. How are you?
Oh, not just delightful. Fucking delightful. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, why not? If I don't believe it, nobody else is going to, girl.
Story last night.
About what?
How I became the, you know, the wonderful and oh so delightful Miss Power Top, so.
Well, I mean, I don't think that I'm the one. I mean, I might have dubbed you the Power Top, but I think that you probably always were a Power Top.
No, you made that announcement. How's that? Well, you know, it's been one of those, like, things only well known in the underground world, but now you made it, you know.
Public knowledge. Exactly. Uh-huh. You sound perfect to me.
All right, so can I put Miss Harper on the phone with you?
Please do.
All right, hang on just one second, honey.
You guys, we're getting ready to speak with Harper Sterling. Her debut single, Disco Mirror Dreams, is available now on iTunes. We don't know much about Harper, except for the fact that she's got a fixation on 80s nostalgia, which is clearly evident when you listen to the track. Again, it's Disco Mirror Dreams, and I loved it because it reminded me of 80s music that I grew up listening to, specifically, for some reason, Tiffany. And I am looking forward to finding out more about her and about her Rainbow Brigade, which she tweets about often. Clearly, anybody who says Rainbow Brigade has an affinity for the LGBTQ community. At least that's what I'm hoping. We'll find out more when we talk to Harper Sterling on this episode of Party Foul Radio. Of course, we're on hold because that's Martha Tang. She is with Mighty Real Agency in New York City. Mighty Real Agency focuses on entertainers of interest to and members of the LGBTQ community. Martha and I have worked together for years and years, and she always provides me all of the fun new interview opportunities, as well as keeps me posted on what the favorites in our community are doing. Martha's a fabulous Asian diva, a power top, as you've heard, and available in the New York metro area. She appears to be single. The reasons for that are unclear, because God knows a power top is hard to find in this world.
Hey, hello to Harper.
Hi, Harper.
Hi, how are you?
I am delightful. How are you?
I'm very, very excited about today. So, yay. I'm so happy to talk to you.
Yeah, well, I just tweeted you, so.
I get quite excited very often.
Well, there's worse things than being excited often, Harper, so that's a good thing. So what? The first thing I wanted to, finding out information about you, because this is your first single, is kind of difficult. So we're going to hopefully explore who you are just through conversation, general conversation. But the first thing I wanted to find out is, it's clear from both the video and from, to my ears, at least through the sound of Disco Mirror Dreams, that you have a real fixation for 80s nostalgia and pop music, and I was wondering how that started.
Oh, well, you would certainly hit the nail on the head, yes. I am, like, obsessed with the 80s. Through and through. Technically, I guess I'm considered an 80s child, even though 1989 doesn't quite count for the first 6 months. But I still like to be a proud, like, 80s fan. But, no, I want to say that probably started, honestly, when I was a little kid. I started listening to a lot of Michael Jackson, Cyndi Lauper, with my parents in our living room. And I love glitter and sparkles and all that good stuff. And so I was just naturally very, very drawn to kind of this je ne sais quoi, like over the top, big hair, big fashion, just the synths, the dancing. I was just all about that. And so that definitely translated from when I was a kid all the way to now through school. I was kind of the little odd bird out, you can say, but I didn't care. I loved it. I loved the fashion, and I loved my big hair, and I was sticking with that. So that's kind of where that started.
It's interesting because you mentioned both in what I've seen written about you and just now, and it's certainly obvious from the fashion that you've chosen, the kind of a look that you have in your music video, but you say that Cyndi Lauper is like such an inspiration for you. But when I heard the chorus, what I was hearing is much more relatable to me, to Tiffany. Like the sound, there's a sound of the track that reminds me definitely of Tiffany, who we've had on the podcast and who I personally grew up loving. There's that very, it's just very, very, very poppy, like bubblegummy.
She's definitely another one. I love this. You're speaking my language. So that she actually is another 80s icon of mine. And it's interesting, and she started so young, too, and that was such, like, an influence for me. And I mean, obviously, I wasn't alive at the time when she, like, initially came out with her first couple singles and did, you know, the mall tour and everything like that. And, of course, YouTube at the time wasn't around. But when I had watched her music videos, I thought that was the coolest thing, and I really related to her a lot. And so without thinking about it, I just realized that the chorus started to sound very Tiffany's-esque. So that's just, it makes me very happy and just kind of like, yay, a little like sparkle inside that you picked up on that, so.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, as a big fan of hers, and if you haven't ever listened to the song Radio Romance, which is my favorite Tiffany song, it wasn't a huge hit, but it that's homework for you.
I have not, but I certainly will.
Yeah, that's your homework. And for you and the listeners, go look up Radio Romance. It's unabashedly teen poppy. It's like the theme of the song, of course, is like having a crush on somebody and you can't tell them because they're interested in your friend. So she calls into a radio show and the guy, you know, plays the song that she wants to dedicate. You know, it's very, I think you'll love it. So you'll have to get back to me about that.
I love it, and we're speaking the same language. So I have no doubt in my mind that I'm going to love it. So that's my homework for later today. And there'll be like a dance party at my living room. It'll be a wonderful thing.
I had it on a 45 record, which you're also too young to remember, but yeah, I had it and I would play it over and over. And so, yeah, anyway, but I definitely picked up on the Tiffany vibe.
I guarantee you, by the way, I'm not like too young to remember. We had records at my parents' house growing up. So we're a very, very, very musical family. You will find out that we love to dance and we love to sing, no matter where we are, even in the car, on the dashboard. So.
Like the whole family, your parents and you? And
yep. Well, more my sister and my dad. My mom joins in every once in a while. So when she joins in and then everyone's in blue moon when my grandparents will join in, you know it's a party.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, well, I did see on your Twitter that you said that your biggest supporter is your dad, so you must be a daddy's little girl.
Yes, I am, and I'm not afraid to say that. I love him so, so much. I promise you I don't play favorites. I love them both equally. But my dad, if I had to say who influenced my love of music the most and who
I was very drawn towards, it would be my dad, because he had, oh gosh, he had so many records of so many different genres of music. Everything from Led Zeppelin, you know, Bruce Springsteen, Pink Floyd, Michael Jackson. I wanted, up until like mid-80s, he didn't really get into, you know, late 80s and early 90s music. That was more my mom, you know, in the radio in the car, and then her and I would do, you know, our lovely, like, Celine Dion ballad, and then we'd, you know, the exaggerated poses and the dancing, and people would look at us at stoplights, and we would just be like, hey, what's up? So.
No, you're, You actually, like, I can really relate to that as well. And you talk about you and your sister, like, being crazy. And I'll tell you this ridiculous story. One time, my sister and I were in the car. I was driving. I was, like, probably 16, and my sister is considerably younger. So she was, like, probably in late middle school, something like that. And we were being silly, just, you know, I think it was, there was a Prince song on it. And I want to say it was, I don't even know what one, but I know it was a Prince song. And she was dancing really, really erratically, like, over the top, in the passenger seat. And we got pulled over by the police because I was swerving, right? Because I was laughing and whatever. And, Harper, I had to lie to the police and say that a bee had flown in the car and that my sister is allergic and she was trying to defend herself. It was horrible. But you know what? we got off the hook.
I should be laughing that you got pulled over, but that's like something that would happen in my life, or that's something that you would think you'd see on like a TV show.
Yeah, I mean, we had to lie. I was like, oh my gosh, she's like deathly allergic to bees, and the ones flew in at the last stoplight, and you know, she was trying to save her own life. It was horrible. Anyway, the trials and tribulations of teenagers who act foolish behind the wheel.
Yeah, that's happened to me a few times, you know. And of course, like, it's so funny. I saw, what was that? I forgot the commercial, but I knew the song that came on, Tell It to My Heart. And when the guy, it's like, it's the Cheeto commercial where he's like, this is my jam.
Oh, yes.
He's like, so excited.
Yes.
When the kids are in the car and he just like belts it out. I was like, I know what I do. That is what I do all the time. I've done it since I was like a teenager and I could drive my own car. That's just what I do. I don't give like two F-U to, you know, the rest of the world. It just,
I
don't care. That's just who I am.
And that's a great commercial, of course. Another throwback jam. Love Taylor Dayne. She's like, I'm a big fan of Taylor Dayne. As a drag performer, I perform Taylor Dayne, and I love it. So, yeah.
Gosh, I love it. By the way, I have to say something about like drag queens. I am obsessed with you guys. I'm not like trying to kiss ass or anything. I am obsessed with drag shows.
Like, well, that's wonderful to hear. We love hearing that.
I love it. And you guys look so damn good all the time. Like, all the time. Like, gosh, I wish I looked like that in a dress.
You know, it always amazes me, I'll meet these women.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I always meet these women, and they're like, oh, my God, I wish that I could look that good in makeup. And I always say, like, you want to look like a prostitute clown? I don't understand this. Like, you could. Like,
I would have used. No, you do not look like prostitute clown. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I just am so intrigued, like, by every performance I've seen. The very first drag show I went to was a couple years ago with, like, my gay best friend. And I love him so much. And he goes, yeah, there's a drag show going on. I'm like, yeah, I always wanted to go to one. I was, like, getting really pumped up and excited. And I watched it, and I'm like, okay, we became regulars. So I'm so in love with you guys.
Well, I think then that you need to, like, continue releasing new music that ideally drag queens can incorporate into their shows and perform, because then that seems to, like, bring all your loves together.
Oh, no worries. I will be releasing new music very soon, actually. I saw that clever way to get into that next topic. I would love to watch just a show of drag queens doing my music. My God. That's like a fantasy of mine. Seriously, that would be like on cloud nine. I'd be so happy.
You managed to bring together some, like, pretty successful people to help you put out Disco Mirror Dream, and, like, you kind of had a Disco Mirror Dream team working on production and stuff. So how did that happen?
Yes, I did. Well, my team, actually, there were a couple different people that worked with me. One was Steve Daly, who actually just worked with Pink on her new album that she, like, had just said, I think she said today what her new album is going to be, and just, like, released all that information. So I was working with him on production on that side of things. I managed, by the grace of God, to get the bass player of David Bowie to play on this track, which was absolutely amazing. I was shocked that my team in New York managed to make that work out for me. I'm like, the 80s gods are speaking to me. I just got so lucky and blessed with this track. And the fact that it all started, I'm not kidding, it started on a dance floor at this, like, dive bar, gay club that plays only 80s music. And there is this massive disco ball on the ceiling. And, of course, I already had a couple drinks in me by this point. And I remember listening to You Spin Me Round by Dead or Alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked up at the disco ball, and I'm like, oh, my God, that's it. So I, like, ran to the bathroom and made, like, a drunk voice memo. And they say the rest is history. So to go from there to, like, working with the team that I did, it's just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you like you said, you have some big-name people who have worked with the top names in the industry who helped you produce this.
And, yeah.
You know, for an emerging artist who's working on their first track, and those things must be incredibly exciting.
Yes. Yes. I want to say that's probably an understatement. It's crazy to me how lucky and blessed I was with this track. Everything just kind of came together, and the more I got to know these people and who my team in New York introduced me to, we just hit it off very well, and they responded very, very well to the track and what it stood for and kind of where it came from and the idea. It just is incredible. I wish I had a better word to, like, describe what I felt when I heard, like, the track in its entirety. I just was like a proud mama.
Now, the one thing I know, having recorded music myself and worked with people who do music production, is that by the time a song actually gets released, has a video and all that stuff, it's usually been months and months in the making. And that means that you invariably have, while this has been moving forward, other projects behind the scenes that you are ramping up to follow. So tell us about those.
I do, actually. I've got quite a few. There's actually one in particular that I can't give out too many details yet, but I can say that by probably next month, you will hear a big announcement about that. Really, really looking forward to that one coming out. I actually just also recorded, or actually shot a music video, which my family came out for. And it was kind of like a guerrilla style out here in Los Angeles, just, like, out interacting with the rest of the people. And that will come out, actually, early next year. And, see, there's I'm just like getting like I'm so animated right now. I know you can't entirely see, but I'm so excited about this. I've actually been working with a choreographer who is Lady Gaga's choreographer. He's worked with her and with Florence and the Machine. I am actually working with him on some upcoming gigs that will be in the very near future. So.
Wow, that is all very exciting.
Yeah. Yes. I know. I was just like, oh, I'm so excited for, like, just to I love to perform in front of people. I love to dance, and I love to sing. And the fact that when I can, like, connect with someone on stage, this is going to sound so damn cliche, but I don't care. I'm going to say it anyway. They're, like, if I can make a difference in one person's life, that makes all of this worthwhile to me.
Well, right.
I know that sounds cliche. I know that does. But it's true.
Well, cliches are like stereotypes. They're usually based in truth, and that's why they get repeated so often they become cliche, right? And, you know, you're talking to somebody who has spent a significant amount of time on stages and understands that, you know, you can show up at a show and you can be thinking to yourself like, oh my God, I really don't want to be here. I have other things that need to be my attention or whatever. And then one person comes up to you and is like, oh my God, you totally made my night and everything is better. It shifts your perspective because you made a difference. What you were doing, like, made a difference for somebody, whether that's made them smile or made them laugh or just gave them a little ear candy, whatever it is, you know, it made a difference for someone.
Yeah, exactly. It just, the first time that I ever, technically I've been performing since I was 3 and I've been on a stage since I was 3, but finally performing my own music was probably a couple years ago, and just the fact when I had someone that came up to me and said that to me, I loved that, and I knew, I'm like, okay, this is like where I'm meant to be. I want to share this love and this positivity and this like idea of acceptance and being unique. Like I need to share that with the world.
Right, and
180s like sequence at a time.
You know, I was going to ask you, because you call your following your Rainbow Brigade, and you talk about having written this track, you know, in some gay dive bar, which God knows I've been to many of those. I was just wondering, you know, if you could tell us about how it is that you sort of fell into that, into my world. You know what I mean? Like that. We might come from different backgrounds, but you've become part of my world now, so...
Oh, you're talking about, like the LGBT community?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, my God. I don't know how I felt... I can't, like, pinpoint a very specific moment that I, like, fell into the LGBT community, but there is... I love... LGBT community, because you guys have always been so accepting. You're fierce. I wish I was better spoken that I could explain how much I love you guys, because I think my best friend, so I met him in high school, and he was kind of, he and two other friends of mine were gay at the time, and I want to say that I guess if I really had to pinpoint that, they kind of got me into that community, and just they showed me that all they wanted to do was be accepted and be loved for who they were. I loved how positive they were, and there was something so welcoming and inviting about that. And then the more I got involved with the community, the more I saw fiercely real you guys all were. And there's this like energy that is just so captivating for me, and I wanted to be a part of it. I needed to be a part of it. Everybody needs to be a part of it. I'm just so enamored, like, with you guys, and everybody everybody has been so welcoming and inviting, and I just need to share my love and my music with you guys because you make me stronger. So
yeah, it's really it's wonderful to hear that people have been accepting and embracing, because right now in the queer community, the LGBTQ community, it feels to me like there's like a real backlash because against straight people, heterosexual women in particular right now. And the reason I think that we're experiencing this is because for so long, the gay community has felt like very separate from, you know what I mean? That we've been apart from the rest of the world. And in the last number of years, with increases in acceptance and our ability to have like equal rights, has come like a flood of interest from or attention from heterosexual people. So like the spaces that once had been like really queer focused are getting like overrun by like bridal parties or, you know, like bachelorette parties and stuff like this. And it's causing like a real backlash that unfortunately is catching a lot of people who have been longtime allies of our community, specifically heterosexual women who have tended to, for lack of a better term, longtime fag hags, you know, like are getting caught in a crossfire because I think that there's we're experiencing that as a community with acceptance and with becoming more mainstream or the increased visibility of Drag Race or whatever, it's become trendy and cool and hip to have gay friends or go to gay places. And with trendy, cool, and hip comes sometimes pretty undesirable personality traits, people who want to come in and be part of it. And I'm glad that you are not personally experiencing any kind of a backlash like that.
No, I can see where you're coming from, though. Like, the unfortunate thing is, that it's, like, considered cool and hip to have, like, a gay best friend. And it's like, that's never been the case for me. Like, I just genuinely love them and embrace what they stand for. And it's never been a thing about being like, oh, it's cool to be, you know, an ally for them just for right now. It's like, no, there's never been an agenda for me. That's never been the case. Well, and I really think people can see through that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, oh my gosh, this is like, so it's a horrible comparison to draw, but I think that you'll understand. You seem to be very pop culture focused. So do you remember when like Paris Hilton and all that had the real life, and then Paris Hilton got the like the pet chihuahua that she carried in her purse, and suddenly like every basic bitch had a pet chihuahua in her purse. Like I feel like in 2015, 16, 17, like a gay friend has become the chihuahua in your purse. It's like, girls, let's get to that gay club and scoop up a homo. We need them right now. Get on it.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's just like, oh, that's so not... That's like a perfect... Okay, I don't want to say like a perfect comparison, but that's like a good analogy to use. It's like, it's not meant to be like, oh, because that's cool right now.
Well, right, and the thing is...
We have to be friends and we have to say, like, we're part of the community because it looks good for us right now. It's like, that's so not what it's about, guys. Well, that's so not what it's about.
Do you know why it's also an unfortunately perfect analogy? Do you know how many fucking chihuahuas got dumped out of a purse like 2 years later when they weren't hip anymore? It's like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Tito. You have to go. It's like, I'm sorry, Tito, you have to go. French bulldogs are the new animal that's in this season. I'm like, dogs and people are not a fashion trend. You know what I mean? Like, social causes are not a fashion trend. Like,
and I hate that, like, that's like, well, okay, it's a strong word, but I don't like the fact that, like, that's what's happening right now.
And
that does bother me. So, yeah, the fact that you're bringing that up is, I am with you 100% of the way. So.
And the thing is, like, I honestly don't think that that is an overwhelmingly true thing. I think that the difference is that, and maybe even the similarity is that, you know, if you fall in love with a dog, if the dog, the breed of dog goes out of cachet, you still love the dog. If you fall in, if you actually, no matter how you, somebody comes into your life, unless you are a truly horrible person, like your interest in or affection for a person doesn't end when it's no longer cool. But, you know,
ideally, you're a horrible human being.
Right. And ideally, even if that were the case, you would still have had some time to be educated. But what I do think that people are experiencing is it's an interesting dynamic with as a drag queen, as like a gay person of a certain age. Like, I will tell you that for me, like, I'll give you a prime example. Like, I posted a live feed video of me getting in drag on my Facebook page. And a woman who was absolutely horrendous to me in high school, like, commented, and she was like, oh my God, you're so fabulous. And what? And part of me was like, oh, okay, well, I'm glad that that's where you are right now. But being appreciative of who we are today does not negate, you know, 25 years of, like, resentment that were instilled in me from the time we were 14 years old in English class, and you asked me in front of everyone if I was gay, and I was humiliated. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah. That sticks with you, especially because that's such an impressionable age.
Right.
In high school.
And I think that our community is experiencing the fact that, you know, we are grateful that people are now more accepting and that we get better things. But unfortunately, the backlash that's happening here is that when something becomes trendy, you get overwhelmed with attention where you're like, I wanted you to be accepting, but I didn't really want you to invade our personal space. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
But it happens in so many different cultures. You know what I mean? Gay culture is no different than how every other white person now thinks that they're a rapper. You know what I mean? It's like, well, like, okay.
Yeah, I was like, okay, okay. Oh my gosh. That's so true. After moving here to Los Angeles, I noticed that. That's the one thing. I love rap music too, but I can already guarantee you I am not a rapper.
So,
nope.
Where did you move to LA from?
White girl over here.
Where did
There's
you?
Too much wet. I'm sorry. Could you repeat that?
Oh yeah. Where did you move to LA from? Where are you originally from?
Well, I always say I hail from Planet Disco, but that's, you know, where I go in my mind space and where it's always, like, loving, accepting. And but I do hail from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, land of the cheeses.
You know what? I don't know if that was where you first went to your first drag show, but I have, like, my friend Esme Rodriguez lives in that general area, and I have several friends who are from that general, like, surrounding. So I do know that there's, like, a pretty thriving gay nightlife there.
Yeah. Yeah, that is actually where I went to a lot of my drag shows out there. And every year there's one big drag show. There's a festival called Brady Street Days. So, and then, like, it all culminates into this drag show at the end. And the streets are packed with people, like, trying to get in so they can see this drag show. And, of course, you got to get there, like, hours in advance if you want a good spot. And then you take turns, like, with your friends. You're like, okay, I'm gonna go get a beer right now. Here. I'll save our spots. You go get one, and then we'll bring it back. So, yeah.
Well, you know what? I am so glad, Harper, that you joined us for this fun conversation. I'm looking forward to what is coming for you. And I know that online you're just Harper Starling on Twitter. And is that your social media handle?
And then same with Instagram. If you type in Harper Starling Music, that will be Facebook. And then the website is harperstarling.com. Nice and easy.
It is easy. Keep it easy, just like me. Easy, but not cheap. So.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm snapping. I know you can't hear that, but I'm snapping right now.
You know what? Well, Harper, I am going to blow your mind right now because I'm sitting completely nude doing this interview. But in
that is amazing. That is amazing right now.
You are going to love this. In honor of the fact that you love the 80s as much as I do, despite the fact that I'm sitting here completely naked right now, I did brush my pubic hair into a side pony and teased it out just for you. Okay, so Harper, something that you have to know about me is, like, as you might have just been able to tell, and my people who are listening to this podcast, people who are my friends in, like, my personal life, know that sometimes I just say super ridiculous shit that comes to my mind, and the more ridiculous it is, like, they know that I think I'm really fucking funny, because I will crack myself up. I'm like, I don't give a fuck if you think it's funny. Bitch, I'm getting my life right now, and what I just said to you, oh my God. I'm sorry. You know what?
Do not apologize. Do not apologize for being absolutely amazing. Oh my God.
Oh God.
That is the best thing. That is so good. That's so good right now.
Highly inappropriate.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
You what?
I said it's highly inappropriate, but nonetheless.
But so fabulous.
All right, Harper, thank you for joining us. We wish you luck, and we appreciate you spending some time with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Oh my gosh, I had such an amazing time.
All right. Best of luck, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
All right, sounds good. Bye.
You guys, that was Harper Starling. Her debut single, Disco Mirror Dreams, is available now on iTunes. Follow her on all her social media, Harper Starling and Harper Starling Music on Facebook. My name is Poyo Del Mar. I'm your co-host. Follow Party Foul Radio at Party Foul Radio on Twitter. Look us up on Facebook at Party Foul Radio. And you know you better follow me as well. I'm the Glamazon PDM on Twitter. We'll be back with more Party Foul Radio right after this. Party Foul Radio is brought to you in conjunction with Swiss Navy Premium Lubricants. Swiss Navy Premium Lube is available at fine retailers near you. Check out Swiss Navy Premium Lubricants. They have a lubricant for every orifice. Swiss Navy Premium Lubricants is a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio. All right, you guys, we are back. We just heard the Harper Starling interview pre-recorded. Pearl was gagging.
Girl, not the side pony pubic hair, girl.
Yes, bitch.
Teased out.
Teased it up. You know, a little got to be glued up in there.
Oh, shit.
That shit's still in a side pony. I'm trying to get it out right now. Oh, well. You know what? It could be worse. What if we'd have got Rick James up on here?
Oh, my God.
And I'd have had a Jerry curl. I had a Jerry curl and had to, like, burn myself in a crack pipe explosion or some shit.
I hope you burn it off.
Oh, my God. We're waiting to hear back we're going to be bringing to you an interview with Mama Tits. We don't know yet if it's going to be pre-recorded without Pearl or if Mama Tits is going to get back to us. As I mentioned earlier, Mama Tits is coming to San Francisco, not this week, but next week for her one-woman show. It's going to be at Oasis, San Francisco's Oasis nightclub. Meanwhile, you guys, Pearl's over here terrifying herself, watching some videos of all these white supremacists marching and whatnot. Girl, they're all marching, holding their $5 Walmart tiki torches.
Right.
I said, bitch, they look like they're about to vote somebody off the island. It's too much. Girl, they look like they were going to Frankenstein's castle. Well, with their fucking pitchforks and whatnot. You've got to be kidding me. Girl, step up into, like, the modern age.
At least
there were some ugly motherfuckers, too. Please put those white hoods back on, bitch.
Oh, my God. Not the white hoods. I'm glad that we could see their faces, though. Girl.
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the things that is beneficial about this is that their identities are being now, because of modern technology, they're marching and whatever, and people are like screen capping them and like identifying them on Google. Oh, did you read that white supremacist website, like GoDaddy, found out like they're posting all this like hatred stuff, and GoDaddy.com, which is apparently where they'd bought their domain name, said, "I'm sorry, but your website is violating our terms of service with this hate speech and whatever. You have 24 hours to like move to a new host server." Then they moved over somehow. They moved over their shit over to Google, and then Google was like, "Sorry about it, bitches. Like, you guys are violating our terms of service too. We don't have hate speech here. We don't tolerate this."
Yeah.
So I don't remember what it's called. The Daily something or other. The long name of it is something, but let's just call it the Daily Klansman. The Daily Klansman.
The Daily Klansman.
Girl, they're going to have to find some like white supremacist domain provider or whatever, because it's
something, girl.
It is terrifying, you guys. We are not used to seeing this kind of civil unrest in the United States, and it is.
Let alone San Francisco.
And, you know, San Francisco, remember, Pearl, I said we were in a bubble, and you were like, no.
Girl, clearly not.
But we are, because of the fact that we could see this happening in Virginia or whatever, and we're shocked by it. But
girl, it's happening here.
If this begins to happen here, then we're going to be really feeling the turmoil, because our bubble will have been invaded. Like, you know what? Something I'm going to tell you, though. Landa Lakes, my drag mother, listened to that podcast.
Uh-huh.
And she and I were having lunch, and we were talking, and she said, you know, actually, some of what Pearl is saying could be very true, because in San Francisco, people being more educated to, like, not meaning more educated in terms of their understanding of trans issues, but more educated to and aware of the existence of trans people,
exactly,
could actually almost reverse your experience, because there are places where you might go where, for example, you would know that being trans is like really, really frowned upon there.
But people don't know that I'm trans.
But they wouldn't clock you. Yeah. They wouldn't identify it.
But here,
people are like a little more on the lookout.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And
not
so,
necessarily on the lookout, but they are aware that we exist.
Right. And they
know what to look for.
They know that you're among us.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Mama Tits just texted back. She said, "I'm just grilling some steaks."
Oh, wow. Come on, grilling steaks. I'm hungry.
I know, bitch. I'm like, bitch, you better grill up a couple extra steaks, ho. Anyway, so yeah. So I'd never really thought about that until Landa said, well, you know, other places, trans women can fly under the radar more, because even, for example, if they're not overly... Oh, here's Mama Tits calling. Even if they're not overly feminine, for example, a lot of bitches are butch in those places, so nobody even notices. Mama Tits!
Toyo Del Mar.
And I'm here with my co-host, Pearl Tees.
Hi.
Oh, hey, girl.
So, we've already been pimping you out, girl. We're getting a pretty good dollar value for you, too.
You know.
Oh, good. I love that. A good 50 cents. Never hurt nobody.
Okay. An extra if you bring steaks, bitch. We told them that you were grilling up the steaks. So,
right, exactly.
So, tell us a little about your one-woman show that is coming to San Francisco.
So, the one-woman show is just that. It's me up on stage. It's kind of like a labor of love. I tell stories of my life and the crazy shenanigans in my life and how I get through life's bullshit with laughter and sex.
Sex?
So sharing the stories of my life gives people hope about their life choices. And it basically is to kind of let everybody know, no matter who you are, what you are, we're all just trying to get through this bullshit game called life. Might as well laugh and have fun along the way. And I share some touching points of my life that are very relatable to people through some really great tang, jazz, and blues song.
Okay, so it's you doing song and dance and story and pantomime.
I guess dance, we can say loosely. We could say loosely, you know, kind of like, you know, how a steak is loosely vegetarian.
Yeah, well, I heard everything about you is pretty loose.
Oh, well.
I think you're damn right. You're welcome. That's why I come to San Francisco. Home of the loose, too.
Okay.
yeah, it's me and my teammates. We hang a little bit of banter back and forth, and it's just a lot of fun. I talk to the audience. It's kind of a sensitive, uplifting, inspirational evening.
So is this the same show that you did for an extended run down in Puerto Vallarta?
It is. It is. It's the first one. Oh, the run I did in PBI, I had to run with tracks. And so I brought it back here and I wanted to take it around, but I wanted to take it to another level. And that level was founding in the confidence.
Oh, okay.
And I have to say, it's the best thing I've ever done.
Well, right. I mean, ideally, having another person on stage with you allows some witty banter back and forth and some chemistry.
Yeah, and it's also because my pianist is a phenomenal, phenomenal pianist. Nathan Young is a composer. He's a queer composer. He's a queer writer. He's an amazing musician. He's a singer and voice coach. Just so well-rounded. And so he just kind of feeds off of me really well. And so if I want to stretch it out, he kind of plays with it. And what's great is while I'm in the middle of doing what I'm doing, he's reacting to me, and a lot of audience members actually were getting a huge kick out of him reacting to me on stage, which is a little hit.
Girl, where'd you go? Did you put the phone under your chin while you were flipping steaks?
No, I didn't. I haven't done a damn thing.
Okay, there you are.
Are you here?
Yeah,
okay. Kind of a weird in and out zone with signal.
So
I apologize.
Oh no, it's all right, girl. We know how it is. This is a cell phone generation, boo. We know exactly how it is. And girl, this is not our first time at the rodeo with a bad connection during one of our phone interviews. So
right. You just came up with a sold out show at the Triple Door here in Seattle. So that was just such a high. So we were ready to let San Francisco have it. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
Right. Now, I know that you've been down to San Francisco before, but this is your first time doing shows down here.
No, this is my first time kind of coming out of San Francisco aside from being a sister. The other times I've been down there was when I was a sister of Perpetual
Indulgence. Oh, my God. I thought you said that you were a fister. I was like, oh, my.
No, that too, but only on Tuesday. Oh, wait, what's today?
Oh, girl, I thought you said this is your first time being here except as a fister, and I was like...
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I was like, mama tits.
Well, you know, whatever floats your boat.
Girl, that's everybody's story at Dory Alley. You know how it is. Oh, let's go to a street fair. The next thing you know, you're elbow deep in some man's ass. Jesus Christ.
It's true.
Well... Yep, I mean... What happens at Folsom stays at the STD clinic. So, anyway.
It's true.
Now, how is it that you got started doing a one-woman show?
Well, I've been a part of a troupe here in Seattle. I do Mimosa's Cabaret every weekend here in Seattle when I'm here. And I've always wanted to do a solo career. I've always wanted to kind of tour and do stuff. So I set up Mimosa's Cabaret. And I have an amazing cast in right now with Tipsy Rosalie, Isabella Exton, Ruby Boucher, and Vanity White. They're an amazing team of entertainers, and they keep it running while I'm done. And then I can kind of go off. And I had an opportunity to go down to Mexico a couple of years ago with the entire cast. And we went down, and we kind of got broken into the market, and it was really amazing. But I found that market was more conducive to a solo act, and it was just kind of the universe. Laid it out there for me and was like, well, hey, girl, put it together. And I got an opportunity to book my own show. Did really well. And now I've got the bug and I love doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely can relate and appreciate that because I am going to be spending the end of this year looking towards tailoring my own one woman show. I think that for those of us who've been in the business for a long time, I think eventually, especially if you're an MC, I think that's the direction you want to go towards eventually.
It's because then you're just basically MCing for an hour and a half, but it's your own thing. You can be afraid of the process, because that's what was the most interesting to me, was building the show and then watching it grow and thinking I knew what it was, and then I had no fucking clue, and then it changed, and then it changed, and then it changed, and then it changed. And it's really wonderful to watch that process, and if you sit back and watch yourself go through it, you're doing it learning with all of these amazing audience members, and it's just such a great relationship that you get to build with different audiences. It's just, it's a cool experience.
Yeah, when I was doing the Golden Girls here in San Francisco, I had the extreme pleasure for almost 10 years of sharing the dressing room with Matthew Martin, who is an insanely talented performer, actor, theater enthusiast, and I would say drag performer, but he isn't a drag performer in the classic sense. It just so happens that almost all the acting he does is when he's cast as a woman, so it's a little different. But he would always urge me, like, you need to do this, you need to do it, and it just felt overwhelming to me, the idea of kind of, it's walking off the deep end, I think, of drag. You know what I mean? Doing a drag show is like swimming in the kiddie pool, but like doing a one-woman show is like swimming with the sharks.
Well, it's frightening as hell. There's nothing wrong with it. You do well, you do well. You don't, you don't.
Mama, you're cutting in and out.
What's that?
You were cutting in and out, girl.
Oh, sorry. I said, you know, they're scary as hell. There's nothing that teaches you more about yourself as an entertainer than doing a one-woman show.
Right. I believe that.
You know, and you have to be willing to take criticism. You have to be willing to step away from it. And it's an exercise in toughening yourself as a performer. It's an exercise in not being too attached to the work you're doing as a performer while still putting all of your heart and soul into it, being able to let it go, let it fly. And it's a test in how you can connect, because especially when you're doing the one woman show, it's, you know, you're doing it over and over and over. It's the same show. How do you make that show interesting to each and every audience that comes through? How do you make it interesting to yourself? And how do you keep it interesting? And that was really fun for me, was to find ways to retell the same stories and make it interesting for me while making it interesting for the audience at the same time. Plus, every time the audience leaves, I always have people come up to me, and this is my main goal. You really inspired me in there. You really changed the way I thought about this. I've never had anybody connect with me in that way, and I really related with that. All these little things, those are my, you know, my gold standards for kindergarten on the board, you know. Whenever anybody comes through and says, you know, that really touched me, and they have a tear in their eye, they say, you know, I understand how that feels, and that really... I haven't had anybody say that, and it's so nice to see a drag queen with an actual message of hope and inspiration, and to see it touch people. There's nothing better than that. No drug, no Doriali, no anything. There's nothing better than that, because you know that heart that you just created is going to live on beyond you through somebody else and perpetuate into other realms.
So, speaking of perpetuating, how long were you sisters, have you been with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence?
Oh my God, 1,002 years.
Stop.
I think I've been with the group and fully professed for 10 years now, but I've been retired for a big chunk of that. Been with the organization, I have to look at my fully professed thing, I've been with the organization for like 15 years, I want to say.
Oh, wow.
So it's like 2002?
I didn't know you could retire from being a sister.
2003, sorry.
How do you retire from being a sister?
You can't, formally go in and retire and say, you know, hey, I'm telling you what happened, you know, and I'm done and I'm walking away and I love you guys, have a good day. I didn't do that per se. I went in and I took a break and I said, hey, I really need to focus on my career. My regular life job was swimming up to me. I wasn't able there to make a living anymore. Because I was just, I hated my job. It was depressing and it was making me sick. My HIV was I had opportunistic infections because of my depression, and it just was this whole like spiral out of control of negativity.
Oh.
So I had to find something that spoke to me, and my doctor even told me, he said, quit your job, find what you love to do and make money.
Well, I mean, we're here. So I'm just...
And I found a way to start doing drag as a career and haven't looked back.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think Pearl's not, like, you know, we're in San Francisco, and of course, like, Sister Roma's been doing sister drag for, like, 100 years, and, but there's, what I think that when one retires from sister drag, it's as easy as you stop attending the meetings, and you let them know you're taking a leave, and then just going about your life.
Well, I needed to focus on me. I had done a lot of focusing on the community and focusing outward, but it was trying for me to focus on me. And I couldn't do that while giving everything to the community, which is what I love to do, but I wasn't able to give to the community that way. Plus, I couldn't make a living as an entertainer as a nun.
Right.
So it became this weird moment where I had to go to my sisters and say, okay, I'm going to kind of focus this direction. I'm going to kind of follow my heart and be an entertainer. So I'm going to put my nun habits in hold for a little while.
She's not completely kicked the habit, you guys, so to speak.
Exactly. She is... You can't. There's no room up for this. This habit is hard to give up. But once that habit is a part of you, it guides you through your existence, whether or not you're physically manifesting, she will guide you on and keep you in shape. Keeping me... I am so thankful that I had this humble upbringing of being a sister, because you need to do the Abbey of St. Joan up here in Seattle does, but they really want you to not be so ego-driven. Remember that, yeah, it may be great and wonderful and you're getting a lot of attention, but it's not 100% about you. It's about a bigger picture, and don't let that envelop you. Do it for a bigger reason. Do it for a cause. Enjoy the fun and the accolades when you get it, but don't let that be the reason why you're doing it. And that drives me every day. And I say constantly, I learned how to be Mama by being a sister of perpetual indulgence first.
The sisters are based around guiding principles.
Correct. Take your vows, and if you mean it, and you take your vows, and you mean it like a true nun, those vows, they mean something.
Right. Well,
just because I hang my hand, it doesn't mean that I hang my values up.
Of course, and I think that with anybody who has internalized a sense and set of ethics, whether those are of the sisters of perpetual indulgence, or perhaps just good upbringing, or whatever, where you value honesty and integrity and truth,
correct.
And you know, like those, I live by a set of guiding principles in my life as well. You know, they're different and they come from a different place, but they're 100% something that it's strongly encouraged that I practice them and, you know, practice those principles in all my affairs and go out into life and do those things.
Well, it's really amazing to see when people have it, and you can always see it. And isn't it funny how you can almost see the people who don't have them?
Oh, well, of course you can.
You can spot them a mile away.
Usually by the fucking trailer wreckage.
You can spot them, you can see, as soon as you hear their voice, you know.
So.
And it's like, okay. Just move on through, you know, kind of go about my thing, which is why I really enjoy doing the solo show, Sweet Like Candy, is I don't have to worry about anybody else. All I have to do is connect with each and every person in that room. And that, to me, is the perfect way to be.
Well, Mama, where can people find you on social media?
Well, on Twitter, Instagram, at TheMamaTits, TheMamaTits. Facebook, / TheMamaTits, TheMamaTits. TheMamaTits.com. You can find me in Seattle. And coming at you in San Francisco on the 27th. I'm very excited. 27th of August, right at the Oasis at 8 o'clock.
All right.
I can't wait.
Well, thank you for joining us, Mama Tits, and we look forward to seeing you in San Francisco, boo.
I can't wait to be there. I love the city by the bay. I'll see you guys soon, and thanks for having me.
All right. Bye, honey. You guys, I wish our connection was better, because she was like...
I hope you guys can understand some of that.
There was some of it that was pretty garbled. But she was giving us some good juicy stuff, too. We're going to have her back on when she has, like, a landline or something so we can chat with her.
Right.
So, especially because I'm probably, if there's, in the editing process, you guys, I do pretty extensive editing, sitting down to, like, make sure the sound quality, if there's parts of that that are too garbled, we might have to take them out. So,
shit.
Mama Tits, please, if I edit you to sound like you're saying something horrible, it was probably on purpose, but I'm going to stand behind the fact that it was because our connection was not so good. Actually, you know what it was, girls? Mama T is a little bit on the plus side, not unlike myself, and bitch...
Girl, that was not under her neck. Stop it.
No, girl, she was eating those steaks, bitch. She was grilling the steaks, and she was... I was like, stop eating the steak! Take the steak out of your mouth, bitch!
So terrible.
Anyways, you guys, we are coming... right now to a close on this episode. Pearl, is there anything that you need them to be on the lookout for?
Yes, you guys. If you guys need lubricants.
Oh, girl, yes, hunty.
Don't forget to check out Swiss Navy Lubes for all of your lubricant needs.
Girl, go on down to GuideToGay.com to find out what's happening down under on Australia's premier LGBT website. That's GuideToGay.com. They're a proud sponsor of Party Foul Radio.
As well, if you're already online, go ahead and check out Left Magazine at liveleft.com, or if you live in San Francisco, pick up the magazine itself at almost any bar in the Castro.
Exactly. All your local retailers, swing on by, absolutely. Swing by the Lookout if you are in San Francisco's Castro District, because you can always find them there. And, of course, the Lookout is just plain fierce.
And if you're in the Castro.
Yes, girl, while you're in the Castro picking up your Left magazine, head on over to 19th and Castro Street. It's Daddy's Barbershop, voted the best barbershop in San Francisco in the 2017 Bestie Awards. Arlen and Jesse, the men and women of Daddy's Barbershop, are proud sponsors of Party Foul Radio. If you are in San Jose, you guys, this weekend, I'm going to be at... Oh, wait, is it this weekend? No, in two weekends in San Jose, on Sunday night, I'm going to be with Ms. Malay Balenciaga for the Post-Silicon Valley Pride Festival. Our girl, our homegirl, Miss Kim Sims, is going to be one of their headliners at Silicon Valley Pride. So I'm looking forward to that. Meanwhile, you guys, follow us on both Twitter and Facebook at
Party Foul Radio.
Party Foul Radio, that's right. You can follow me at the Glamazon PDM.
And you can follow me at Pearl Tees. That's T-E-E-S-E. No porno, honey. This weekend, I will be all over the place. I have three shows on Saturday.
You better have every show.
Right. I'll be helping support the Trans Employment Program at a fundraiser over at Bow, hosted by Miss Eva Sensitiva and her house. So come on by that. I think that's from 4 to 7, and then I'm doing some private gig. And then I will be out at DNA Lounge for Booty that night for the Beyonce mashup night.
Booty, 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 booty. And this Sunday, if you're in San Francisco and you want to find out about charitable causes, swing on by Encore Lounge. The Grand Ducal Council of San Francisco, I'm 100% certain, is getting ready to have their annual gala, during which they will announce their new candidates for Grand Duke and Grand Duchess.
Oh.
I think it's 4 to 7:30 this Sunday, coming up at the Encore Lounge. I think, fingers crossed, that we're going to see Miss Shugana and our Knob Hill correspondent, Lexi Shimmers, in a head-to-head competition for Grand Duchess.
Oh, wow. This is going to be good, girl. And you guys, that's over on California, right between, I think...
like, just past Polk and...
It's on California, right before you hit... Right... Girl, it's on California.
It's at California and Polk Street, you guys. Anyway, this has been episode 79 of Party Foul Radio. I'm Poet Almar.
And I'm Pearl Tees. Girl.
Girl, who is you?
Pearl Tees.
And we're out of here.
Bye. It's so hard.